All right, so welcome back to the Average Ontario Anglers Fishing Podcast. This is actually episode 40, which is now, what is it, Andrew? Season two. Season two, isn't that crazy? But first of all, before we get into the episode, how cool was that intro?
That was awesome. That was far superior to than what I think I could have done.
Oh, 100%. Well, there's the first one of the season.
You started.
So that early. Intro was actually made by a podcast fan named Ted Williams, and he had help from his buddy Diego Fernandez at Oracle Studios. They actually produced this, and he sent us a clip of it first. He's like, "Hey, I've been working on this. Listen to this. See what you think." And it was amazing. We made a few little suggestions, and he did it amazing. It was perfect. I was actually blown away.
He's our John Williams. Like, Ted Williams is our John Williams. Yeah.
So we'd like to thank him for that. We're going to put actually the link to that studio down if you're ever interested in checking him out. We're getting some music done too. But anyway, like I said, this is episode 40. And again, like we always said, I never thought we'd actually get this far. Now we're on season two. First season, Andrew, how many episodes? We did 39
episodes, including the bonus episode, is kind of the best of that you were able to put together. So
yeah,
this is episode 40 in total.
So if this is your first episode, there's a lot of people that have been fans for the last year, but if this is your first episode, welcome. Of course, we are Average Anglers with slightly better than average radio personalities. But what our goal is to produce a clean, enjoyable, relatable, an educational show every single week. All of our shows, they air Sunday morning and they happen every single week. So that's exciting. Last season, like we said, we blasted through 38 or 39 episodes and we covered such a wide range of topics, I find. And it covered topics that everyone would be interested in if you're just getting into fishing or if you've been fishing like me and Andrew for many decades, or even if you fish for many decades and you're way better than me and Andrew, as most people are. We only said we're average. We never said we're good. So today is kind of our welcome back episode. I mean, we're a little bit rusty. Like I was just saying to Andrew, we haven't recorded in what, 5 weeks? Feels weird.
Yeah, it's been a while because it's nice to have a little break. And we'll go into the kind of the purpose of that break besides just it got real busy for us for a bit.
Yep.
But we want to continue with the weekly podcast. So that is our plan. We will continue to do so. It is weekly content. But we had a lot of prep work to get going to get ready for season two because there are some changes coming.
Yeah. So I thought this episode we could kind of go through a little bit of our plans for season two. So you can kind of whet your appetite for what's in store for the next season of episodes. Let's just say another 40 episodes. And some of the things that we're excited to do in the coming year could be fishing, some of the technology that we've invested in for this season. So I thought we could kind of do that. But before we do that, we have a longstanding tradition. We have an interesting fishing fact, and handling that is the man with the mustache, Andrew.
All right. So
dazzle me.
This is, I'll do my best. So this is the first episode, right? So this is going to be airing right at the beginning of January. We're recording this. It's end of December right now. And what's on your mind, Jesse? And I'm sure most of our listeners.
Ice fishing.
We're pumped for it. You and I, we're super excited for it.
It was +7 today, though.
It's disappointing so far, but I am excited for it nonetheless. So I wanted to look into, it's more of a sign. I wanted to start it off with a really good, interesting fishing fact. I wanted to find something humorous. And then I decided, you know what? No, I'm just going to do scientific. But this, I found this absolutely fascinating. And I don't know how much of this you know, Jesse, but what happens when a lake freezes? Like, what's the science behind it? What occurs, what natural phenomenon occurs when there's a lake that freezes over? So there are a few things that are kind of key points. There's the oxygen levels it affects, the water temperature, obviously, the density of the water, and algae and other forage. So water is most dense at 4 degrees Celsius or 39 degrees Fahrenheit. So in the warmer months, the hottest months of the year, that hot water sits at the surface. And as winter comes, the surface will cool. So as that water temperature cools down to that 4 degrees, it becomes more dense and it starts sinking through the water column. So it pushes down and then the warmer water pushes up. It's called the turnover. I'm sure you've heard that expression before. So the turnover allows the entire lake to reach 4 degrees Celsius. That's cool, right? It's not just layers and water. The entire lake has had a chance at one point in order to be at 4 degrees Celsius. Now, it also redistributes oxygen throughout that entire lake, because most of the oxygen is obtained at the surface. So as that water is sinking and new water is coming back up, and because it's, you know, less dense and it's essentially floating up, that's moving oxygen throughout the entirety of the water column. Now, once the ice starts forming, the ice, it starts to float above. It's, again, 4 degrees is its most dense. Either side of that, it starts to get less dense. So once it freezes, it starts floating up, and then it will insulate to prevent, you know, the whole lake from freezing solid. Another thing that the ice does is it reduces the light coming through. So a lot of the aquatic plants have to stop growing, or they aren't able to. But there are actually algae that require the ice, and they will grow at the bottom of the ice. And this is when they thrive, in the wintertime. Other, you know, roots or other creatures, they'll remain kind of in the substrate in the bottom of the lake or close to the shoreline, like we talked about before with frogs hibernating. Close to the shore, but they're in, like, or right in the bottom of the lake, and they'll kind of hibernate. But thanks to the turnover, the entire water column is oxygen rich. It's right before ice. It's pretty much the most oxygenated the lake can get. Once the water starts to open, the ice thaws, that algae that was growing on the bottom of the ice, that starts to, again, not quite the same as a turnover, because it doesn't have to, again, that water will kind of reach 4 degrees. So some of it will have another turnover, not as great in the spring, apparently, as the fall and the winter. But that algae is now being released from all that ice, which, and the zooplankton as well. That is the base of the food chain. So now all these young fish, these invertebrates, start eating this algae and zooplankton. And that is a big necessity for these lakes up here that these fish require. And you think of, again, follow the food chain back, that eventually lines up to the game fish that we want. So the lake freezing is vital. But do you know what fish do? So we talked about, in general, the lake. But fish, what do fish do under the ice? So there's essentially three different types of fish that we have in Ontario. There's warm water species, cool water species, and cold water species. So unlike reptiles and amphibians, where they can actually, yes, they're underwater, but they go into an hibernative state, fish don't hibernate. But depending on what type of species or subcategory they are, they do act differently. So a warm water species like largemouth bass or muskie, they slow down tremendously. With cold water temperatures, it slows their metabolism because they're a cold water or cold-blooded creature. So their metabolism slows down and it reduces their need to eat. Not having to eat as much means less activity. Less activity also means less oxygen use. So when that ice is there, there's a limited supply of oxygen in that water because it can't get any more oxygen from the surface. And plant growth isn't producing it because there's not enough of it. So it's a good thing that these fish's metabolism slow down in this cold temperature because there's only a finite amount of oxygen that can be used. Then there's cool water species. So things like walleye, smallmouth bass, perch, panfish, pike, they will still move. They'll still eat more frequently, but not as much as they would in slightly warmer conditions. So they still do stuff, but again, those are species that we actively target with ice fishing still, so they still hunt and eat. Then, finally, we have the cold water species. These are things like the trout and the salmonoids. And under the ice is prime time for them. In fact, they're one of the very few species, especially lake trout. Their growing season is all winter long, like all summer long, all winter. They don't ever stop. Bass in Canada, they will stop growing during the winter months because they just won't be able to feed enough to be able to put on any weight. But trout and salmonoids, but especially like lake trout, are known where all winter long it's growing season still for them all year round. So those are the ones that are really kind of peak. So that's kind of the science behind, say, a lake freezing. And one last thing to finish this off, because of course I've got to put something that's kind of humorous in there or interesting. Safe ice. Is there such a thing?
No,
I agree. However, you can be either dumb about it or, you know, somewhat smart about it. So do you know how much ice it takes to support different things?
I have an idea.
Okay. What's the minimum thickness of ice that can support a human? Now, this is not recommended to go out there, but what's the minimum amount of ice that could support the weight of the average person?
Is this like the government standard or the actual amount?
The actual.
Okay. Because I know, like, they say 4 inches.
They say four inches.
It's probably closer to like two and a half.
Two inches can support, 2 inches of solid ice,
yeah,
can support 200 pounds.
Okay.
Which is, that's a lot considering, like, that's a lot of weight. At 4 inches, it can support 800 pounds. 4 inches of solid ice. So that could support spread out like individual people doing things.
Yeah.
5 inches can support 1,200 pounds, which would be like two people standing on top of each other. 8 inches can support 3,200 pounds, or about the size of a compact car. 9 inches is 4,000 pounds, which is about the size of a standard car, or the weight. 10 inches, it starts to get interesting. Now, like when we go out on a lake, like 10 inches, we always think, okay, like now I can start to feel safer. You know, we always recommend use a spud bar, especially when it's thinner. But 10 inches is still like, for that person might think that's a little, like that's kind of still thin. It's only 10 inches of ice.
Yeah.
Guess how much weight 10 inches can hold?
Pickup truck? I don't know.
A small pickup truck with some gear. Yeah, it can hold 5,000 pounds.
Wow.
12 inches can hold 7,000 pounds.
That's of good ice, though.
That's of solid ice, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure you've heard like ice road truckers and stuff like that, right? Where yeah. they actually drive across frozen lakes. So 20 inches of ice can support 25 tons. When you get places like way up north where they're actually driving across these lakes and they have 3 feet of ice, like 36 inches, it can hold 110 tons.
Wow.
Like, that's nuts.
That's crazy.
And that's not just like a broad, like that's under each, like on a small, like for, I think it's 50 PSI is standardized. At 50 PSI pounds per square inch, it will hold 110 tons. So yeah, so it's true. There is no such thing as safe ice, but it's a lot less sketchy than what people can make it out to be at the same time. If you're smart about how you're walking out there, you're keeping track of pressure cracks, ice itself is very impressive as to what it can support.
But if you're not knowledgeable on finding good quality ice, try to stick to at least that 4-inch range, I would say, just to be safe.
Oh, yeah.
I know there's always guys that are out there and they want to be the first guys on the lake catching fish.
And that's for walking out. That's not a guy on a snowmobile. Yes, technically it can support maybe the weight of it, but yeah, that's
I say like to people, 6 inches. It's not worth risking your life for a bunch of small yellow fish or even big yellow fish. I don't care. So that was interesting. The interesting fishing fact is basically a segment that we try to bring something interesting and educational, or maybe stuff that you haven't thought of before. We did a lot of really cool ones last season, and we're going to try to up our game a bit this year. Not as many loon facts, but probably loon facts 100%. But I'll give you guys the winner off. So anyway, I thought we could just talk a little bit about season one and some of the stuff that happened. Because like Andrew said before, it was quite a grind to get through basically 39 episodes and record every week. And one of the first changes you'll notice, we're going to talk more about this after, is we're actually recording this on over our laptops in our own houses here. So doing it in our studio, it took a lot of effort for us to meet there every week and take a, you know, big chunk of time out of our day every single week. So we invested in getting, it's called Riverside FM. A lot of, you know, podcasts do this. It's online. The quality is really good. The video quality is really good. So if you're watching this on YouTube, that's awesome. Hi, how's it going? And if you're listening to this on Spotify or Apple, the audio should be crispy as usual. So that's one of the big changes first. But that was the main reason we decided to do that, is because, like I said, it was very time consuming going in every single week. And Andrew can tell you, like, even through camping trips and Andrew being sick and just different things, it was a pretty hard grind.
It was a big challenge. Because yeah, the amount of time where we could actually feasibly get together to do it in person is greatly reduced than just maybe we have a free evening and we can record it over the computers like this. So this will help to ensure that we can have a regular, you know, supply of content for you guys.
Yeah, because obviously if it is a lot of work to run a podcast, and so we do appreciate everyone's support, but we have to make it a little easy on ourselves. So this is one thing we're doing, and so far we love it. So let us know what you think. Let us know if the quality, the sound quality and the video quality is acceptable for you guys. And I'm hoping it is, because we did a test and it looked really good. But anyway, I thought we could go over kind of season one. Again, it was a lot of work. We got a lot of really positive feedback. We got to work with a lot of companies and we had a fantastic time. Some of the things, a little bit about our podcasting journey. It sounds a bit cheesy, but if you're looking to get into a podcast yourself, it seems very intimidating. And it was, I guess, for us. Like, what do you say, Andrew?
Yeah, like we thought it's like it'd be a blast to do, like we talked about before. But once we actually started getting the equipment to have it done proper, it was more than what we were expecting. or what we realized, I would say.
I mean, I'm sure we would have changed some of the things that we did, but what we did, I know we always say this, we invested in good equipment. We didn't want to buy cheap equipment because we wanted to produce a show that was, you know, good quality. So that was one thing, buying all the equipment. We actually built a studio, not from scratch, but we decorated up a room and did pallet wood, if you saw from season one. That took a bit of work and time. And then we actually sat down and we planned out all the episodes. Like we planned out, I think, the first 20 episodes before we even recorded the first one. So we wanted to make sure that we had enough content to get through, you know, a reasonable amount of time. And it turns out there's no way you couldn't have content if you're talking about Ontario fishing, because there's every month of the year, there's something to talk about. There was never a week when we were like, I don't know what to talk about.
it was more like there were times when it's like, I really want to talk about this topic, but it makes more sense to do this one instead in the meantime. There's so many other, you know, like we did talk about a few kind of general stuff like, oh, like spring fishing, or we talk about, you know, frog fishing or jigs. But on those are some of the hardest episodes because we're trying to cover so much information. We couldn't cover the full topic as much as we'd want to, as effectively as you'd want to. Whereas the ones where you can kind of break it down into, you know, oh, like finesse fishing for bass, or, you know, crappy spring fishing, like something a bit smaller of a topic, we could delve, you know, better, or in just a specific lure, like chatterbaits. Like I love that episode.
Yeah.
So stuff like that is, you know, when you look at it that way, there's so much more content to be considered, you know, when you look at it on the finite details.
For sure. And we're excited to get back into that this year, starting earlier in the year, because last year we actually started pretty much the beginning of March. And now this year we're going to have a few months of a head start because we didn't get to cover any ice fishing topics last year because we hadn't started that early yet. So the other thing we had to do is after we recorded is we had to learn how to edit. It's not that hard, but it for me and Andrew, like, you know, Andrew's a plumber. I'm a handyman. I'm not good with computers. I'll tell you that. So I had to learn how to edit the podcast, and that took a bit of time.
Jesse's better than me. Well, Jesse's better than me at computers. And now this is going to be my year to have to learn how to do some editing. So I'm a little nervous.
We're actually breaking up the work this year. So I'm going to be editing the podcast, the audio podcast. So if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, that's all me. And if you're watching the YouTube version, that is all Andrew. So if it sucks, you know what happened.
Yeah. Then you can start writing in and saying, Jesse, please do more.
So the next thing that we kind of went through was, you ever heard of imposter syndrome?
I have.
Yeah. How would you just...
But you're asking the guy who went through it.
How would you describe that?
It's feeling like you're not worthy of the attention. You know, it's like It was shocking the response that we got from listeners. How many people right away started listening to us, which, you know, when you say like the number, oh, we had 150 in the first week on our first episode downloads, which, okay, that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you look at what's expected from new podcasts, like we were blown away by what, you know, by the numbers, and then the good feedback that we've had. And even up until recently, like when we're seeing the people's, you know, favorite podcasts of the year, they're posting on Instagram and whatnot. The amount of times that we're up there with
some big names,
you know, either top of the list or right alongside these other big names in podcasting, that I feel like we don't belong there. At the same time, I know that we're putting out a bunch of effort, so I feel like it's deserved in a way, but at the same time I still can't really believe it.
So imposter syndrome, it was a little bit weird getting to that, but the next stage is we kind of got over that. And the way that I felt is like you said, you may not feel worthy to teach on a subject because, you know, there's guys out there that there's anglers out there that are much more qualified, you could say, or have a lot more experience or fish more, but we're doing exactly, we're staying true to our name. We're average Ontario anglers. We work 9-to-5 jobs or more, and we fish when we can, and we've loved fishing our whole life. So we have no problem talking about it. And it got to the point where we're realizing thousands of people listen to the podcast. So that's amazing. So we're trying to get over that. It still feels a bit weird that we actually have people that are like, hey, I love your podcast. It's super weird, but that's good. The next thing we did is we had fun. I thought we had a lot of fun last season. There's a lot of episodes that were pretty funny and we got a lot of, like, you know, good interaction and people messaging us saying, you know, they found a particular segment funny or an episode. And I've had people say like, oh, I've listened to some of the episodes several times because I enjoyed them so much. So that was really amazing. Another thing we did is we connected with a lot of businesses. Like, we've been on our Average Ontario Angler's Instagram. We've been a big supporter of local businesses and bait makers for years, 5 years. And going on the podcast and having the ability to sponsor some of these guys for free. We're not charging these guys for free to get some giveaways going for you guys and getting a lot of people won. We did over 20 giveaways last year with the average value being $100 to $200. So that was fantastic. We met a lot of people, had some good, you know, relationships built up and some other, you know, opportunities that will probably be coming back this year as well in 2024. So that was really good. A lot of companies that I never thought we'd ever get to work with, and it worked out really good. And then as we mentioned, the following grew. So like as the podcast started, you know, the first few episodes, they were like, oh, expect 30 episode downloads per episode when you first start off. And we were getting hundreds and hundreds. I was like to Andrew, I'm like, it's like 400 or 500. And it just grew from there. And it got to the point where we were like, this is pretty good. Like, we're really happy with this. It was way better than we thought. So we would like to thank everyone, every download, every Patreon member, everyone who watches on YouTube. It's much appreciated. It's amazing. I've no words. I never thought it would be this good. So what do you have to say about that?
I don't know what else to say. It's awesome.
And then just to add, I guess it was funny meeting people at some of the shows we went to, like the ice fishing show. And we had people specifically come up to us and be like, hey, I listened to your podcast. That was the first thing they said to us. And I was like, okay. They didn't say, normally it's like, oh, I know you guys from Instagram or I know you guys from YouTube, whatever. But it was specifically like, hey, I really enjoy your podcast. So It makes us feel good, makes us want to continue on. So we appreciate all that. And while you're at it, if you're listening right now, we're kind of in a review war. So go on to Spotify, give us a review. Go on to Apple, give us a review, rate us a review. It really helps us out. It gets our ratings up higher. It helps our show do better, which helps us get better sponsors so we can have better giveaways for you guys in 2024.
And it also helps more people just
find us,
learn about us too. Yeah, it allows us to be more, you know, searchable, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
So if you like it, there's probably a few other people around the world that do too.
For sure. And actually, I'm going to get into some quick stats here. So last year, or like 2023, we started in March and we went to basically December, the end of November. So on Buzzsprout, which is our podcasting host, they host 100,000 active podcasts. And our podcast was in the top 10% of those 100,000. So that's awesome. Blew my mind. And we have downloads from 58 countries all around the world. And we got over 50,000 downloads in our first season. So we're getting more than 1,000 downloads per episode, which is absolutely fantastic. Much higher than we thought. We were expecting much lower than that because that's what the average was. I mean, it also helps that we had, you know, such a good community on our Instagram as well that got a lot of followers in. So we're definitely happy for that. Now, here's kind of the things that are changing. We mentioned we're on Riverside FM, which is basically a fancy, high-quality Zoom. And I'm sure most people over the pandemic were like just annoyed of Zoom. But we're actually really happy to be on this Zoom because it makes our job so much easier. So again, we mentioned it's easier on me and Andrew. Again, we both work full-time. We have other responsibilities as well. So it's better for that. But the main thing that we really wanted to do is we wanted to get on guests. And since our studio, we only had two mics and it was, you know, in a specific location.
10 feet wide.
Yeah. Now the fact that we're on Zoom or over the internet or interweb.
Riverside.
Yeah. We can have on guests, which is amazing. We're actually going to line up hopefully 1 to 2 guests every month. And they're going to be guests that are experienced anglers, guides, tackle shop owners, you name it. We're going to put them on. I already have a bunch of really good ones lined up for ice fishing. I have a guide lined up.
Yeah.
And I have another guy who is a legit hammer from Northern Ontario. So we're excited to get those on. And the other thing is with this, there is a slightly higher cost to run the show because we're paying for another program now. So we would like to thank all of those on Patreon that are helping support the show. Yeah. If you're not on Patreon already and you're thinking about doing it and supporting this show that happens every week, there are going to be benefits of being a Patreon member this year. We would really appreciate it if you go into our Patreon and try to support the show because it actually helps us not pay for the show out of our pocket. So for Patreon, basically, if you're not aware, what's Patreon, Andrew?
So Patreon is you can subscribe to give either a one-time donation or a monthly subscription to Patreon. And essentially, there's a $2, there's a few different tiers that we have set up. So for $2 a month, I think it's the lowest one. But essentially, that means you can now access your content on Spotify through Patreon. So any Patreon-only content that gets uploaded in the future, that would be for Patreon-only members. It can also be another way that we're going to be using it for is it can help isolate's the wrong word. It can help organize for the giveaways.
Yeah. And the main thing we're going to be doing this year is we had a lot of really good giveaways in 2023. In 2024, to enter any of the giveaways, which are going to happen twice a month, you have to be a Patreon member. That's the way it's going to work now. We're going to be rewarding people that actually support the show. So if you want to do that, it's only $2 a month. There's already a lot of people out there that are doing it. We really appreciate all your support last year. And it just helps us to cover the cost of the show. That's pretty much it. The other thing you get when you're a Patreon member is a warm and fuzzy feeling of supporting Jesse and Andrew.
Yeah, which is crazy because last year that's all people got for doing so. So again, super thank you for all of those people. But yeah, this year for everyone who's on it, it's the giveaways are for Patreon only members. So for $2 a month, you are automatically entered into the giveaway,
which and have pretty good odds, honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
So the other thing that we're excited for in 2024 is we actually invested a bit into more camera equipment. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that we actually bought was a 360 camera. So why don't you talk a little bit about that and what we're excited to use that for?
I'm super pumped. So the 360 camera is going to be made use of primarily in the boat. So we wanted to do a lot more video content on our YouTube because we loved doing it before. We didn't have a chance just with the podcast kept us so busy last year. We didn't really have an opportunity to do too much on the boat. Cause again, once you're out there fishing, we didn't have a whole lot of days in the water last year. So we wanted to make use of that time. The great thing about the 360 camera is you can have this thing with a regular, constant power feed, and it will record constantly. So as soon as something happens, we'll be able to get that, you know, that blow up, that strike, we can get all that footage, and then we can more easily create content for, you know, us on the water talking to you guys, making instructional videos, but also just getting some amazing like B-roll footage of the actual exciting events that happen on the water.
Yeah, and we usually do a lot of crown land camping and like backcountry camping, so hoping for some nice cinematic footage of some of the adventures that we have. So that'll be really exciting. And we got the Insta360 camera and we got a 512 gig chip. That's a lot of content. It's probably like one video and 5.7K or something. The other thing that we're actually getting in the spring is a drone, which I'm really excited about. I've wanted a drone for so long. And there's so many places that I've been like, man, we need a drone. And we went fishing with Adam and Ben from Paddleheads last year, walleye fishing. And Ben had a drone and he was up. He'd follow us around the lake. We're driving around. He actually got us on camera, like fighting a fish right beside the boat. I was like, that's absolutely insane. I need to get one of those. And I'm really excited about that. So that's another thing. We're going to really be trying to up our game. Again, the podcast, it did take a lot of time. So we didn't get to make as much video content, but
have seen like Jesse's videos that he's cut together and stuff. Everything that we've ever posted before has only been from an iPhone camera. Like that's everything that you've seen him do. And Jesse's quite good at the video editing. So
with an iPhone,
when he cuts together, with an iPhone. So now I'm really excited. And I know everyone else who watches YouTube stuff will be that Jesse will have even better footage to work with and just more footage to work with. So I'm super excited to see
overhead like shots of Andrew and his mustache flopping in the wind.
Like me in a thunderbox, be like, get out of here, drone.
So another cool thing that I thought we would do this year, and this isn't 100% confirmed, but I really want to do it, is I want to do local tackle shop videos. So we have a lot of good relationships with a lot of our local companies around here, Gagnon Sports, East Hill Outdoors, Peterborough Pro Tackle. We're looking to, those are the shops that we know, we mostly fish or buy our fishing stuff. But there are a lot of other shops in Ontario that a lot of guys will be like, oh man, you got to go up to Tromblaze or you got to go here, you got to go there. And it's like, it's cool, but I'm not going to drive 3 hours to go to a fishing store. But we're going to be trying on our fishing trips to stop at any tackle shop we can, which we usually do anyway. But we're hoping to get some contact with, you know, talk to management, of course, and go in there and take some footage, maybe talk to some of the guys or girls that work there and just, you know, talk about some upcoming sales that are happening or new products that are coming out.
Yeah. These aren't undercover shopper, like lapel cam videos.
Let's see how much this guy knows about Sankos. What an idiot. Yeah. So I'm excited about that. So anyway, I know this episode is a little bit boring because we're kind of talking about, you know, some of the, you know, housekeeping stuff that's going on. But starting next week, it's going to be right back to the fishing. And actually next week, I'm hoping that is the episode that we have one of our fishing guests talking about ice fishing. One of the main questions I got last year was, when are you guys going to do ice fishing content? And it's now. It's going to be January and February for us, for sure. And we have got some really good ice fishing guests coming up. But I thought for the rest of this podcast, we're going to kind of talk about our plans for the next few months anyway, not the whole year, because that would take forever. But Andrew, why don't you tell everyone about what we just bought a few weeks ago?
We were able to, I'm very excited. So Jesse and I, we would talk about doing this for a couple of years now, and we went out and bought a thermal pop-up hut, and it's 8x8. Like for footage, square foot. And we wanted to do overnight trips for ice fishing because I haven't been ice fishing. I went once in the past 2 years. And I used to go, when I lived right by Lake Simcoe, I used to go all the time. The lake froze a lot better back then. So I used to drive my car on the ice. I got a few stories about that.
Yeah.
But I love, like, ice fishing is a blast. And when I can't get out on open water, I need to do something to get onto fish until open water again. So I like making use of it. But because it's been such a challenge with, you know, we'll have one day where we can go up and we got to get up super early. And I'm sure everyone here knows the frustrations. If you don't live on a lake, you know, if we want to go out for perch on Lake Simcoe, we have to get up at, you know, 4 hours before the crack of dawn, start driving up there, you know, get a bunch of minnows at a tackle shop that opens up early, try and find a parking spot by the lake, which there's no parking anywhere by the lake anymore. And then we got to walk out. And then by the time we get out there, the sun's been up for an hour already. So we missed the early bite. And then right as the bite's going to get good in the evening, we got to pack up and head home because it's, you know, Sunday and we work the next day. So it was a big challenge for us to get out and actually make good use of our time on the ice. So with being able to do overnight trips, we're hoping to do, you know, camping right on the ice. We have a couple of cots. We've got the floor pads. We've got, Jesse has the buddy heater. So we have all the equipment now. I bought a new sled this year to pull it out. So we're all geared up.
Big boy.
it's a big one. So we're all geared up. We're going to have some video footage about that as well of our experience and how we set up for, you know, winter camping out on the ice. But now we can head out there on an evening or an afternoon, stay over when you get up. We have the early morning bite. We can take a nap in the day. It doesn't matter. We have the evening bite. We can sleep over again. So our time on the water is going to be so much more well spent. So we're super excited about, you know, when the hard ice, you know, does come, we're pumped to be out there.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of the time is we would go fishing like up north for us. Like you're driving 3-4 hours. And again, you got to do an overnight trip or else it's not worth it. You don't want to be driving 8 hours in one day to fish for 8 hours and you're just exhausted. I mean, back in our early 20s, that was no problem, but not so much anymore. And I hear it just gets worse. So if you're over 40 and listening to this, I apologize. Yeah. So we're really excited because ice fishing is one of those things. Like Andrew said, he grew up right on Lake Simcoe and we used to ice fish all the time. There used to be a lot of ice though back then, but here we are early January.
It used to be 2 feet thick, which can support 2 feet of ice can support over 25 tons. So I had no issue driving my Cavalier on the ice and just, I'd open my door. I'd drill a hole beside my door in the Cavalier. And then I just close the door, have my perch rod out the window and have the heater on, the radio's going. I'm just parked it on the ice, going perch fishing. I'd go out for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever, and just drive back. It was awesome.
That's what they call the good old days.
Yeah.
But we are excited for ice fishing. We are planning on getting out, obviously, for perch is one of my favorite things that we can do. Yep. We're also hoping to get out for some lake trout up north too. I wouldn't mind getting out for some pike. I love pike fishing.
I would love to go pike through the ice. Yeah.
Yeah. If you guys have any tips of where to go pike fishing, in southern Ontario that's decent. Like, we have a few lakes that, you know, we know we could catch pike in, but it seems pretty slow most of the time. But if you have any good tips you want to share with us, wink, wink, send us a message. I'm not asking for fishing spots, but I'm definitely asking for a fishing spot.
I am. GPS so, coordinates, please.
Yeah, please send. So I thought the last part of this episode, I did a Q&A on Instagram, some questions, if you're willing to answer some of these, Andrew. But one of our favorite things we'll to see. Do.
I'll take it by a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. So if you don't follow us already on Instagram, definitely check us out at Average Ontario Anglers, as we're called everywhere. And every so often, usually before a podcast, we will put up a questionnaire or a question up on Instagram and just enter it there. And any appropriate fishing question, we usually will answer. So here is the first one. The Morning Voice. Any tips for what the average shore angler who can't get out on ice can do during winter?
Right now is actually awesome for shore anglers because there's no ice. But as the ice comes in, the areas where that will remain open the longest are areas like river mouths where a lot of current is. And you won't have, like in wintertime, what'll happen is a lot of the fish, because their metabolism slow down, they may move away from strong currents, but cold water fish or colder water fish like pike, especially like early ice out when around those river mouths starts to thaw, the pike come in for the spawn and they're right there at these open water river mouths and harbors and whatnot. So if you can get in there, that would be like finding any open water, you can still catch fish in it, even in the colder temperatures, just using very, very slow techniques, like a very slow, like jerk bait retrieve or something like that.
Yeah. And steelhead fishing is good year round as long as the creek's open. And yeah. Unfortunately, it's not like it used to be. I don't want to sound like an old man, but I grew up down the road from one of the creeks in Durham region and it would freeze every year. Now we're at the point where it doesn't freeze that often. Like in the main part of, you know, late January, early February. Yeah, it's frozen. But most of the year now, like right through the end of December, it's wide open. It's +5, it's +7, you know, like even if it's 0 degrees, as long as the lower creeks are open, you can catch steelhead. But the river mouse, again, good. The lower rivers, really good. And also a lot of guys and girls will go fishing just for like perch and panfish. If you can find like a marina or harbor that's still not frozen, you can catch fish there. I'm not going to lie. It's probably slower than it would be in the summer, but it is possible. We've also caught pike in the winter. Like, right, remember that time in December we went out?
In a canoe.
We went out pike fishing in December, caught a bunch like on jerk baits. Like the key, like Andrew said, really slow jerk baits or live bait, if you can get it, would be great too. But really slow jerk baits and just let them sit for like 10, 20, 30 seconds and just twitch them slowly. And these pike will just come up and engulf them. We've had some good days.
Yeah. For other things too, like for anyone who they still want to get out, if you have never tried ice fishing, and it may be daunting to try and get all your gear together yourself, go in with a couple of friends and book a hut. Rent a hut. It's on perch grounds, or if you're just waiting for, you know, whitefish or lake trout. There's so many hut runners, and the seasons are getting harder and harder for these guys. But if you can take like a midweek day, they usually have availability. So if you have the opportunity to, you know, go out once, it's going to be a couple $100 or so. But, you know, you save up, you go out once for the winter, and you'll know if it's something that you want to continue to do in the future. But it can be fun. And if you go out there with the intention of hanging out with your buddies in a hut, you will have a good time that day.
Yeah. Another thing you can do too is you can hire a guide, which is oftentimes something you don't think about during ice fishing season. But a lot of these guides, they also guide on the ice as well. And you can, you know, go out and catch fish, catch perch, whatever, or you can learn to do something more advanced. So like, even if you're someone who considers yourself a very avid angler, hiring a guide could be a good thing if you're trying to, you know, learn something more advanced, like, you know, oh, I want to learn how to catch whitefish, you know, in 50 feet of water with a little jig on the bottom. You may have tried that many times and failed at it, but fishing with a guide, you'll learn these little tips and they'll get you on fish and they'll up the odds of you learning how to do it. And then the next time you go back by yourself, you know how to do it. So hiring a guide, like we always say, it's expensive, yes, but the amount of information and knowledge you learn in such a short period of time, it can really, really be worth it, guaranteed. So another question, Connor Slyford says, what are your guys' fishing goals for 2024? What's your goal?
Catch big fish.
Really?
No.
I thought it was use BFS. Those don't match.
Yeah, it does, Jesse. Yeah. No, for me, I want to catch topwater muskie. That's something I already have, but I want to get like on a actual muskie size topwater.
That's harder than it sounds. Every time I chuck a big muskie topwater, nothing. And I chuck a bass topwater, muskie.
And I would also like to break my personal best largemouth. I think that's every year. Yeah, you want to break personal best, but I think for me, mine is just over 4 pounds only. So I have, there's easier potential to break that, you know, PB for me. So I'd love to get a big bucket mouth.
That being said, you're not really a largemouth guy.
No, but I want to focus a bit more on this year.
I'm actually, because this past year.
Now I've got a flipping rod this year, right?
Yeah.
I've got the frog rod. So I'm getting more geared up for some actual hardcore bass or like largemouth fishing.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, like in 2023, we didn't really go bass, like largemouth bass fishing a lot. We normally do because a lot of the lakes that we fish a lot are reedy and full of stumps and blah, blah, blah. But we actually focus more fishing up north and there wasn't as much largemouth fishing. We kind of more focus on smallmouth and other fish. And walleye, but this year coming up, that is one of my goals too, is to go largemouth fishing more, but fish other lakes than the ones I normally do. Because some of the lakes that we fish, a lot of the Kortha lakes, there are big buckets in there, definitely, but they're really smart and hard to catch. So if you go up north, I notice that they're not as hard to catch, and there's more potential of catching a 5 pounder. My goal, like you said, is to fish more largemouth, but my goal is to catch more muskie. Like we caught more muskie last year, 2023, than we did the year before. And I'd like to keep that going, maybe catch some bigger fish, maybe something in the plus 45 inch range on top water, maybe. So here is another one. What's your favorite month of the year to target steelhead? That's from Ontario Young Outdoors. Honestly, my favorite month to target steelhead, that's hard because I'd honestly say like November is usually really good when I used to fish a lot. But I'd say my favorite overall has to be like late February, early March, just because it's at that time of year when you've gone through a long, depressing winter and maybe you've gone ice fishing and then you're like, you know what? The birds start chirping. There's still snow on the ground, but it's like spring is coming. You have that, you know, the smell of spring and you just feel like a little upbeat because, you know, summer is coming. And it's at that time when you catch the most insane fish. I think fall fish fight pretty good, but those fish you catch in the spring are just insane. That's my favorite time. And the water's like, you know, chocolate milk color, or just like really dark green, and your float's just slowly slipping through the frog water and it just bloop, just pops down and you set the hook and it's just like you hooked like a crazy rocket. That's my favorite time. But me and Andrew got to do that more because Andrew's not much of a steelhead guy. I got to convert him. Here's a good question from Ted, who actually is the guy that made the music for our intro, which is super cool. He said, what would you recommend for getting into ice fishing? Rods, lures, augers, etc.
I would say like a power auger is nice. It's not necessary, but having a way to chew through that ice, especially when it gets, you know, heavier into the season, it's tiresome, especially when you're trying to track down. Let's say you're going perch fishing, you're trying to track down this fish and you're drilling 20 holes a day. It can get aggravating if you don't have a good auger. Even if you just have a good like hand auger, but get one that will work well for you. And I would say that the other thing would be making sure you stay warm, like good boots. Because the only thing the thing's going to get you off the ice sooner than later is going to be
your toes.
Yeah, your toes getting cold. Otherwise, like let's say if you want to start off easy and you're going for panfish, you're going for perch, you can use pretty much any rod. You can use a tip up on that you make yourself. It doesn't matter. You can get it on the water. It doesn't have to be fancy gear. That's what I do like about ice fishing is you don't need high end gear. You know, they have these custom ice rods. It's like, I don't need to spend $300 on a rod that's 1.5 feet long, you know?
Yeah.
So, but having, I would say investing more so into, and again, your baits, you're getting, you know, some little Cleos or some jigging spoons and you tip it with a minnow, that's what you're going to use. Like that's what pretty much everyone uses because it's effective and it works. So you don't need to break the bank on the actual fishing gear, I would say, but I would invest in, you know, a good sled that you can pull well, good quality winter gear that you'll be comfortable on the ice.
Yeah. And when it comes to augers, like auger size, like it depends what you're fishing for. Guys that fish for lake trout, 10-inch auger, you know, or you're going to get an 8-inch auger with a pilot bit so you can drill a bunch of holes close together and have a big triangular hole. But if you're just perch fishing, you can get away with a 6-inch hole. 6-inch is good for walleye too. You can pick them up. The last two augers I had, I actually got for free. So I've never bought, I haven't bought an auger in forever.
I have a nice hand auger that I used, that we used it for a number of years.
Yeah.
And I got it at, if you go up around Lake Simcoe or by any lake that's known for ice fishing, look at the garage sales and you'll find ice augers. Like, yeah, absolutely. Guys selling their whole like little ice fishing kit, and it has some old rods, some old tip ups, and there you go. That you can use that and you can go out there. That's some guy's whole kit that he used. It's in a bucket. You're good to go.
Yeah. And I wouldn't worry too much about spending, you know, $600, $700, $800, $900 on one of those electric augers. Like if you can afford that, that's great. It's a good investment if you actually ice fish a lot. But if you don't ice fish a lot and you are someone that works with your hands, you can get the drill attachments for the augers. As long as it's a good quality professional grade drill on speed one, up to an 8-inch auger. I've used an 8-inch auger, really good with a 6-inch auger. You can drill through 3 feet of ice, no problem. They have extensions and everything, not a problem. So you can spend $100 on an auger. You can spend $800 on an auger. Buy the best one you can afford and you'll get it. If you have to use a hand auger, we did that for years. It works too. And if you're stronger than we are, it probably works pretty good. But for us, it's terrible. Here's the next question. I catch dinks. Best outing of 2023.
I did really like our camping. Like I had doing that back lake muskie trip was good. I would say my favorite though was probably that spring walleye trip though. Like that was finally, for years I wanted to go for walleye. We did, and we had good success. Like it was textbook what I've wanted to do for years. So I love it.
Yeah, I'd have to say probably the same trip. We went backcountry walleye fishing on a lake that had literally zero pressure. But yeah, that was a good trip. Yeah, and our backcountry muskie trip was really good. And then we had a few really good muskie days, like that necessarily weren't, you know, super productive, but like we, you know, had a few days where we put one in the bag and we saw a bunch of other fish. That's always exciting. You know, like with muskie fishing, I know a lot of people, they're like, oh, you fish all that time to maybe see one fish and maybe hook one fish. And that's totally true. But honestly, on those days when you grind out and you're casting and you see nothing. And then all of a sudden you raise a fish, even if it's not a big one, like a 35-inch muskie, and it comes up to the boat and you're just like, your heart's just pounding. It's so much more exciting than catching a bunch of fish, like bass, in my opinion. And then that day that you actually get one in the net, not even if it's a big one, like we went fishing with our buddy, Paul, we were out there fishing like late October, like it was cold and we were just jigging tubes or something on the side of the boat in slightly deeper water. And we're just talking, just having a good time. And all of a sudden I just look down and this muskie just like grabs my tube right beside the boat. I wasn't even paying attention. And Andrew was like, no, my God. Like, just like, and then I just like set the hook. And then Paul got the net, scooped it in the net. And we were both just howling. We're like, woo! It was so exciting. And it wasn't even a big fish. It was like 32 inches. But yeah, it's just a fun thing. And I think that's what fishing is supposed to be. It doesn't matter what you fish for. I know some people that fish for certain species will think they're better than people that fish for other species. But at the end of the day, you're doing the same thing. You're catching fish. Mm-hmm. You want to have fun. It doesn't matter if you fish for carp, bass, muskie, steelhead. It's all the same.
Yeah.
Maybe catfish isn't the same, but just kidding. All right, let's do one more question. This question is from Wham Baits Canada, who is a gold member.
Hi, Wes.
Who's the coolest Ontario bait maker you know? I'm pretty sure it's Brendan from The Perfect Jig. Yeah, it's Wham Baits.
Wes has some awesome stuff. He's actually messaging me on Instagram with some of the newer molds he's bringing out. And I'm not going to announce them myself, but they look awesome and they're right down my alley. So
yeah, actually he's been messaging us pictures of a lot of the new stuff he's coming out for 2024. And yeah, a lot of these baits he's going to be showing off at CanCast, which is a show that we're really excited for. That's April, the beginning of April. And see my bait wall, I've got some Wham baits right here. You know, it's good stuff. We use Wham Wim Bates a lot. We like him because he's a local guy, local company, and he makes good quality stuff. But he has a lot of baits that are going to blow your mind this year. I'm really excited because if we're talking about shallow water largemouth fishing earlier, this he's got some baits coming out that.
And you were talking about BFS earlier, and he's got some of those baits too.
Shh, that's a secret. We'll delete this later. Don't worry. Just kidding. Anyway, so this is the first.
I don't know how to edit this out.
This is the first episode of season two. So we're at season two, episode 40. Again, we'd like to thank everyone for their support. Again, if you are on Patreon supporting us already to help support the cost of the show, we thank you so much. And our first giveaway, the odds are going to be pretty good. So if you'd like to get in and support us on Patreon, the link below, it's in the show notes, as Andrew will put in the YouTube notes as well. So we do appreciate that. And next week, get ready because it's going to be an ice fishing episode. It's going to be called Ice Fishing Essentials. And I'm excited because we like ice fishing, but the guy that we're going to have on, he's kind of an expert. He's pretty good. So we're going to learn some stuff. And that's the thing about this show too, I want to mention. We're not pros. We never said we're pros. We're just really good at telling stories. So we're going to have on some guests that are actually experts so we can all learn. You listeners and us as well, because we'll be listening to the guy talking. So anyway, Andrew, we're going to end this by asking Andrew for the quote of the week.
Quote of the week is, stay chilly, my friends.